bum bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum ba da dum bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum. Welcome to Everyday Musicality, the podcast in which we discuss all things related to Gordon's music learning theory and how it can help unlock the inner musician that lives inside of all of us. I'm your host, Heather Scholdeis, music educator and faculty member for the Gordon Institute for Music Learning. In this episode, I give an overview of the types and stages of audiation. Hello, and welcome to the Everyday Musicality Podcast. Happy New Year! I hope your 2023 is off to a fantastic start and that it is a healthy, happy, and fulfilling year for you. I'm excited to be back with new episodes for the new year. Before I get into today's topic, I have a small favor to ask. I'm in higher education. I teach at Eastern Michigan University, and this year I am applying for promotion to full professor. If you're not familiar with that term, academia is basically a big hierarchy. When you're new to academia and get hired for a tenure-track job in the U.S., your starting position is usually called assistant professor. Then after a certain amount of time, you can apply for promotion to the next level, which is associate professor. I did that back in 2018. Now I'm in my fifth year at the rank of associate professor, so at the end of this month, I will be submitting my materials to apply for promotion to the highest rank, which is full professor. So as a part of this process, I have to write up everything I've done in the past 5 years, including talking about my teaching effectiveness, my service to the profession, and my scholarly activity. So all of my research and other publications and presentations I've been doing. And for all of those things, I have to show documentation to support my work. So I can't just say, I'm a good teacher. I have to include data in the form of student ratings and comments on a bunch of facets of my teaching. I can't just say, I wrote a book. I have to include evidence that I wrote a book and that it's been useful for music educators. I can't just say, I've served the profession in this way. I have to show documentation that it's made an impact. I think of this podcast as a service to the profession. I started this podcast because I saw a need to bring music learning theory to more music educators and thought the podcast format would do this in a unique and readily accessible way. So when I write up my narrative for my application for promotion to full professor, I'm going to talk about the work I do in creating the content and recording and editing the episodes for this podcast, as well as the impact the podcast is making. How many people it's reaching, how many times it's been downloaded, that sort of thing. And this is where I'm asking for a small favor from you. If this podcast has been helpful for you and you have a few minutes to spare in the next week or two, I would greatly appreciate it if you would get on Apple Podcasts and write a review of the show or send me a quick email describing how the podcast has been useful for you in your teaching practice. Then I can include those podcast reviews or emailed feedback in my narrative when I'm trying to make a case for why the podcast is a valuable service to the profession. So if you would be willing to do that, I would be so grateful. Or if you're a teacher educator and you use my book in that capacity, such as a required textbook for a music education methods course, I would be so grateful if you could put that in an email to me. You can email me at everydaymusicality@gmail.com. If you take the time to do any of these things, thank you in advance so much for doing this small thing for me. Okay, let's get into today's topic, which is the types and stages of audiation. If you're not very familiar with the concept of audiation, it is the heart of Gordon's music learning theory. It is so important that it was the very first topic I covered on this podcast back in episode 1. I'll link to that in the show notes, and I strongly recommend you go back and listen to that episode before today's episode if you're not very familiar with the concept of audiation. I'm not going to rehash everything I covered back in episode 1 today, but I do want to stress one thing about audiation, and that is that it's not the same as inner hearing. I'm hearing more and more music educators using the term audiation, which is great, but a lot of them are using it to mean inner hearing. So just basically silently singing through a song in your head. And while hearing musical sounds in your mind is a necessary part of audiation, when people use the term audiation as a synonym for inner hearing, that's missing a key component. And that key component is comprehension. Audiation is the hearing and comprehension of musical sounds in the mind. And remember, that doesn't mean being able to label things about the music or talk about it theoretically, necessarily. When we talk about comprehension in terms of audiation, we're talking about a sense of syntax, a sense of the tonal syntax and rhythm syntax of the music you're hearing in your mind. You could interhear musical sounds in your mind with no comprehension of the musical syntax, and that would not be audiation. That would essentially be inner imitation. Now, I'll admit, when I was teaching elementary students, I would teach them the word audiate as simply meaning when we think music in our minds. But that was just because I didn't want to overwhelm kids with all the details. So that was the kid definition of the term audiation, to think the music in your mind. But there is so much more to audiation than just hearing sounds in your mind. And that is what I'm going to get into today. Today, I'm going to be giving an overview of the types and stages of audiation. First, let's start with the stages of audiation. The six stages of audiation are what Gordon theorizes occurs when we audiate, or the mental processes involved in audiation. And these stages of audiation are sequential. They occur in a particular order or sequence. At a certain point, these stages of audiation happen so quickly that they might seem simultaneous, but there is actually a hierarchy to the steps. Each stage of audiation is dependent on the one before it. It builds on the previous stage. So let's get into those six stages of audiation. The first stage of audiation is momentary retention. You hear the physical sounds of music in the environment, and then you retain them in your mind for a short time. Now, this does not necessarily mean that audiation is taking place. Again, it could be that you are momentarily imitating the sounds in your mind after you hear them. But stage one, momentary retention, is a necessary starting place for audiation. If you can't retain musical sounds in your mind once you've heard them, it would be impossible to audiate. So stage one of audiation is momentary retention. In Gordon's words, we retain a series of pitches and durations just perceived as an aftersound for only a few seconds, about the same length of time we unconsciously retain with closed eyes an after image of what we have just seen. Gordon goes on to say, unless in stage two we give conscious meaning to the aftersound within a few seconds, what we have retained in stage one is lost. In other words, if we have no way to give meaning to the sounds we've retained, we have no way to hold on to them. By the way, that was an altered quote that I just read from page 19 of Learning Sequences in Music. So after stage one, momentary retention, next is stage two of audiation. And in stage two, we start to make sense of sounds we've momentarily retained by recognizing or identifying a tonal center and macro beats. In other words, we do the bare minimum in terms of recognizing tonal and rhythmic context. In order to audiate a specific tonality like major or Dorian, we have to first be able to sense where home is. We have to audiate the tonal center. So if I were to sing a tune, you would be able to sense the pitch where that tune wants to end if you're in stage two of audiation. Let's try it. If you heard in your head, bum, after I stopped, you were sensing the tonal center. In terms of beginning to sense rhythmic context, stage two of audiation involves audiating macro beats, or the big beat level. So if you're hearing the tune I sang just then, if you were hearing that tune at stage two of audiation, you would be sensing, you're feeling those big beats. So stage two of audiation again is recognizing or identifying a tonal center and macro beats. And of course, we might be only focusing on tonal audiation or rhythm audiation. It doesn't have to be both recognizing or identifying tonal center and macro beats. In fact, you might, if, for example, maybe you have a high tonal aptitude and a lower rhythm aptitude, it could be possible for you initially to be audiating tonally, to be sensing tonal center, but to not yet be at stage two rhythmically, to be audiating the macro beats. That's entirely possible to be at different stages with the different dimensions of music. Now, sensing tonal center and macro beats doesn't yet give you enough information to audiate tonality or meter, because that requires relating the tonal center or macro beats to something more. In the case of meter, it requires relating the macro beats to the micro beats. In the case of tonality, it requires relating the tonal center to the other pitches in the tonality. This is what happens at stage three of audiation. Stage three is establishing objective or subjective tonality and meter. Really quickly, before I talk about stage three, I'll define those terms objective tonality and subjective tonality, or objective meter and subjective meter. Let's just look at tonality, for example. If music has objective tonality, then if multiple people listen to that music, they would tend to easily agree on the tonality. Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, for example. Bum, 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 ba-dum, bum, 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 bum. If a person's audiating tonally, they're likely to sense that bum is the resting tone. Yeah, da, 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 da. So Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star has objective tonality. But with some music, multiple people might hear it and disagree about what pitch they're audiating as the resting tone. For example, this melody. I'll sing it again, and you try to hum the pitch that you're audiating as the resting tone. Maybe you said, bum, for the resting tone. That would be the resting tone that the composer had in mind. That tune is called Beth, and it was written by my friend and fellow Gimmel faculty member, Jennifer Bailey. She's also my co-author, along with Jill Reese, on our book Q&A for MLT, General Music Perspectives on Music Learning Theory. So Jennifer was audiating Locrian when she composed that tune, Beth. So if we're audiating bum as the resting tone, we might harmonize that song like this. However, when I heard that song for the first time, unaccompanied, I audiated this. So I audiated the resting tone here or here, bum, bum, bum. Now, Ed Gordon would say that what we audiate depends on what we have audiated in the past. I think I tended to audiate that song in Mixolydian, and still do, because I've become so used to hearing that stereotypical chord progression in Mixolydian of, if this is the resting tone, a common progression is 7-4-1, 7-4-1. There are so many songs in Mixolydian that fit that progression. I talked about this and gave examples of songs that use this progression back in episode 12, which was all about Mixolydian tonality. I'll link to that in the show notes. So because I was so used to hearing that progression in Mixolydian, it made me want to audiate Jen's song as being in Mixolydian because my audiation put that chord progression underneath the melody. When I hear it with Locrian chords, I can totally audiate it that way. But left to my own devices, I just want to audiate that song in Mixolydian. So we could say that that song has subjective tonality. Different individuals might tend to disagree on what the tonality is or where the resting tone is. Not that either of us is wrong, it's just that there can be multiple possibilities rather than readily coming to a consensus. Now back to stage 3 of audiation. In stage 3, we build on our audiation of tonal center in stage 2 and perceive how tonal center relates to the other pitches in the context. We audiate essential pitches and essential tonal patterns in the music, and this is what enables us to recognize and identify tonality, whether objective or subjective. In terms of rhythm at stage 3, we build on our audiation of macrobeats by audiating the relationships between macrobeats and microbeats, and by audiating the essential durations and essential rhythm patterns in the music. This equips us to recognize and identify meter. It may not be that we can explicitly label the tonality or meter, but we're sensing the tonal and rhythmic context implicitly. Next, in stage 4 of audiation, we retain in audiation tonal patterns and rhythm patterns that have been organized. You can think of this as similar to building a vocabulary of words in order to speak our native language. Once we're starting to make sense of our native language, we can recall patterns of sounds and use those patterns of sounds to communicate. Those patterns of sounds in language are words. In music, once we get to stage 4, we can retain and recall tonal patterns and rhythm patterns that we have already audiated. This is our vocabulary of tonal patterns and rhythm patterns. Then in stage 5, we recall tonal patterns and rhythm patterns that have been organized and audiated in other music. When Gordon says organized, he basically just means we've made sense of those essential patterns in terms of the tonal and rhythmic context. We've audiated those patterns. So at stage 5, we recall tonal patterns and rhythm patterns that we've already made sense of and audiated in other music. By recalling these familiar patterns, we're able to give deeper meaning to new music that we hear. When you hear unfamiliar music, recalling tonal patterns and rhythm patterns you've already audiated in familiar music enables you to make predictions in terms of what happens next in the unfamiliar music. And that is stage 6 of audiation, anticipating and predicting tonal patterns and rhythm patterns. As Gordon puts it on page 23 of Learning Sequences in Music, anticipation means foretelling what will be heard in familiar music, whereas prediction means foretelling what might be heard in unfamiliar music. If we're anticipating or predicting, we're engaging in stage 6 of audiation. Now, when it comes to prediction, it's not about whether you're right, whether you actually predict what the music does do next. What it is about is that we come up with a prediction of something that would make musical sense. So those are the 6 sequential stages of audiation. Again, they are stage 1, momentary retention, stage 2, recognizing and identifying a tonal center and macrobeats, stage 3, establishing objective or subjective tonality and meter, stage 4, retaining in audiation tonal patterns and rhythm patterns that have been organized. Stage 5, recalling tonal patterns and rhythm patterns organized and audiated in other music. And stage 6, anticipating and predicting tonal patterns and rhythm patterns. And that doesn't necessarily mean isolated patterns, but patterns that make up the whole of a piece of music. Now let's get into the types of audiation. Gordon theorized that there are 8 different types of audiation, and these 8 types are not sequential like the stages are. The types of audiation are different ways that we can audiate. So the types of audiation don't have to happen in a specific order. The types of audiation are 8 different ways that we can engage with music using our audiation. I think of them as verbs, things that we do. In other words, the types of audiation are essentially different ways that we can do audiation. The first type of audiation is listening, how we use our audiation when we listen to music. And this can happen when we listen to familiar music, music we've heard before, or it can happen when we listen to unfamiliar music, music we've never heard before. When we engage in this first type of audiation, listening to familiar or unfamiliar music, we can sense the tonal and rhythmic context. Even if we haven't formally learned to label the tonality or meter, we can implicitly sense the context. We can audiate where home is in the music we're listening to. We can audiate levels of beat. When we're listening to familiar music, our audiation enables us to anticipate what we're going to hear next. When we're listening to unfamiliar music, our audiation allows us to make predictions about what we might hear next based on our sense of context and our prior music listening experiences. So that's one type of audiation, listening to familiar or unfamiliar music. The second type of audiation is reading familiar or unfamiliar music. And this doesn't mean being able to label the letter names of pitches on the staff or recite time value names of notes. That's not true reading. Gordon would call that decoding. Reading in the second type of audiation means being able to audiate the sounds that the symbols on the page represent, to look at the symbols and hear the sounds in your audiation, and to do this without using an instrument to tell you what it should sound like. Gordon refers to this as notational audiation, being able to look at notation and hear in your mind the sounds represented by the symbols. Notational audiation is also involved in the third type of audiation, which is writing. Type 3 is writing familiar or unfamiliar music from dictation. Now, this writing doesn't mean composing or creating music and writing it down. Some people, I think, hear the phrase writing music and associate it with songwriting or composing. But type 3 of audiation doesn't involve coming up with the musical sounds that you're writing. It's simply hearing musical sounds in the environment and writing down the symbols to represent those sounds. So in type 3 of audiation, we hear familiar or unfamiliar music, and we can notate it using our notational audiation. We can represent the sounds we're hearing in written form. In a way, type 3 is like the reverse of type 2. In type 2 reading, we go from symbols to sound. We look at the symbols and translate them into sounds in our audiation. But in audiation type 3, writing, we go from sounds to symbols. We hear the sounds in our environment and translate them into symbols as we write. And we can do this again with either familiar music or unfamiliar music. One quick side note, notice that in the first 3 types of audiation, they each can occur with familiar or unfamiliar music. So this means that we can use these types of audiation both when we're engaging in discrimination learning and when we're engaging with inference learning. For example, we could read or write familiar patterns that we've learned to read or write by rote at symbolic association, or we can read or write unfamiliar patterns that no one has ever showed us how to read or write. We can teach ourselves. We can infer how to read or write those unfamiliar patterns through generalization. If you're not familiar with those terms, discrimination learning and inference learning or generalization, or if you'd like a refresher, I talked about those back in episode 9, which was all about the skill learning sequence. I'll link to that in the show notes in case you'd like to listen. Next, audiation type 4 involves recalling and performing familiar music from memory. In type 4, you're remembering music you've heard in the past and you're singing it or playing it on an instrument. Type 4 has nothing to do with notation. It's simply recalling musical sounds you've already heard and audiated in the past and producing those sounds yourself through your voice or an instrument. So essentially, type 4 is singing or playing by ear or by rote. And the key here is that if you're audiating the music, you're sensing the context. You're audiating the essential tonal patterns and rhythm patterns that make up that music. You might also be sensing the harmonic progression. Now, that doesn't mean you're necessarily labeling all of those things explicitly, but you're implicitly sensing them. So that's type 4, recalling and performing familiar music from memory. Type 5 is recalling and writing familiar music from memory. Instead of singing or playing the familiar music, you're notating the familiar music. And the difference between type 5 and type 3 is that in type 5, the sounds are not physically present. In audiation type 3, you're hearing the musical sounds in the environment and taking dictation. In type 5, you're audiating the sounds internally and writing them down. So if I sang Mary Had a Little Lamb for you and asked you to notate it, that would be type 3 of audiation. But if I asked you to silently recall the song Mary Had a Little Lamb and notate it, that would be type 5. And notice that both types 4 and 5 involve recalling, so they both involve only familiar music, because you can't recall something you've never heard before, right? So types 1 through 3 involve listening to, reading, or writing familiar or unfamiliar music. And types 4 and 5 involve recalling and either performing or writing familiar music from memory. Now, the last three types of audiation all involve creating or improvising, coming up with your own musical sounds, and they all involve unfamiliar music. Because you're making up something new, it won't be familiar. You might draw from familiar music you've heard in the past, but by nature, creating and improvising result in something new, something unfamiliar. Type 6 is creating or improvising unfamiliar music while performing or in silence. So you could do something like create and sing a new pattern or melody out loud, or you could simply create and hear that new pattern or melody in your head silently. Either way, it's type 6 of audiation, creating or improvising unfamiliar music while performing or in silence. In audiation type 7, you're reading and creating or improvising unfamiliar music. So you're starting with some kind of music notation and using it to create or improvise something new. For example, realizing figured bass. That would be an example of type 7 of audiation, because you're looking at something in notation and then using it to come up with your own musical sounds. An example of type 7 I might use with kids would be if they've learned to sing and label major tonic and dominant patterns with solfege, I might also start associating Roman numerals to those functions. So I might write the Roman numerals 1 and 5 on the board and sing major tonic and dominant patterns with solfege and ask the students to point to the Roman numeral that represents the function they're hearing. So 1 for tonic and 5 for dominant. Then I might bridge to creativity improvisation and tell the students I'm going to point to one of those numbers and their job is to improvise and sing a pattern with solfege that fits the function I point to. So if I pointed to the Roman numeral 1, they might improvise back, so do me. But if I pointed to the Roman numeral 5, they might improvise, so ti re. So they're improvising based on what they see. Or, once they're comfortable with that, I might write a harmonic progression on the board with Roman numerals like 1-5-5-1 and ask the students to improvise a series of tonal patterns that fits the given progression. So they might read those Roman numerals and sing something like bum-bum-bum, 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 bum-bum-bum. That would be an example of type 7 of audiation, reading and creating or improvising unfamiliar music. Finally, we have type 8, which is writing and creating or improvising unfamiliar music. So in type 8, we create or improvise musical sounds and we notate them. For example, I might ask students to improvise a 4 macro beat division elongation pattern in duple meter and notate it in 4/4 with the quarter note as the macro beat. By the way, if you're not familiar with that term division elongation, that's part of Gordon's system of categorizing rhythm pattern function, which I described back in episode 44. I'll link to that in the show notes in case you'd like to take a listen. So back to type 8 of audiation, writing and creating or improvising unfamiliar music. Now, I disagree just a bit with something Gordon says in his book, Learning Sequences in Music. In describing types 8, he says, process for types 8 and 7 are the same. The physical difference is type 7 culminates in reading, whereas type 8 culminates in writing music we have created or improvised. That's on page 17 of the 2012 edition. However, I don't entirely agree with that. I agree that type 8 culminates in writing music we have created or improvised, because first we come up with the new sounds, and then we translate them into symbols in notating them. But personally, I don't think that type 7 culminates in reading. I think type 7 starts with reading and then culminates in creating or improvising something using what we've read. So I see type 7 and 8 as more reverse processes. Type 7 starts with notation and uses it to create something new, and type 8 starts with creating something new and turning it into notation. Maybe I'm wrong. If you disagree with me, please feel free to let me know. You can email me or send me a voice memo at everydaymusicality@gmail.com. I really wish Dr. Gordon were still around so that I could ask him what he thinks of my interpretation, but since that's not possible, I'd love to hear what you think. So those are the 8 types of audiation. And again, those were type 1, listening to familiar or unfamiliar music. Type 2, reading familiar or unfamiliar music. Type 3, writing familiar or unfamiliar music from dictation. Type 4, recalling and performing familiar music from memory. Type 5, recalling and writing familiar music from memory. Type 6, creating or improvising unfamiliar music while performing or in silence. Type 7, reading and creating or improvising unfamiliar music. And type 8, writing and creating or improvising unfamiliar music. Well, I hope this has been an informative overview of the 8 types and 6 stages of audiation, and that you continue pondering these different types and stages as you interact with your students and plan your instruction. Before I go, I wanted to mention that the Gordon Institute for Music Learning will be holding a virtual faculty hangout on Saturday, January 28th at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Cindy Taggart will be answering questions and engaging in discussion of creative musicianship. That's the focus topic for the faculty hangout. So the ways that we can engage students in things like improvising and composing. If you want some advice for teaching those skills, this is a great opportunity. You just get to come and ask Cindy questions. And if you don't have questions to ask, you can just show up and be a lurker and learn from the discussion. The faculty hangouts are free for GMO members, and all you have to do is register by January 26th, so 2 days before, to receive the Zoom link to the hangout. I'll provide a link to more details in the show notes. And finally, one last plea. If you've appreciated this podcast, if it's helped you in any way, I would be so grateful if you would review the show on Apple Podcasts or email me a message letting me know how it's helped you so that I can include those messages in my application for promotion to full professor at the end of January. In the meantime, if you have questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please get in touch. You can email me or send me a voice memo at everydaymusicality@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and let's keep musicking every day.